Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Well, Donald Trump has been president of the United States for, well, a very short time now, less than 1 month. It was only a couple of weeks ago that he was inaugurated as the president of the United States. But since he's been inaugurated as president of the United States, we're pretty much seeing the same thing that we saw on the campaign trail. Facts that are completely made up. And now a new term. Yes, a new term. Alternative facts. That was coined by Kellyanne Conway when she appeared on CNBC's Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Why the president asked the White House press secretary to come out in front of the podium for the first time and utter a falsehood. Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
Chuck, do you think it's a fact or not that millions of people have lost their plans or health insurance and their doctors under President Obama? Do you think it's a fact that everything we heard from these women yesterday happened on the watch of Barack Obama? He was president for 8 years. Donald Trump's been here for about 8 hours. Do you think it's a fact that millions of women, 16.1 million women, as I stand here before you today, are in poverty along with their kids? Do you think it's a fact that millions don't have health care? Do you think it's a fact that we spent billions of dollars on education in the last 8 years only to have millions of kids still stuck in schools that fail them every single day? These are the facts that I want the press corps to cover. This is why I'm here at the White House.
But I understand
to
this.
Change
what I don't
awful
understand
numbers
is,
like that.
That is not what yesterday was about. So you have not answered the question. You did not answer the
it's
question.
It's what this presidency is going to be about.
You sent the press secretary out there to utter a falsehood on the smallest, pettiest thing.
I don't think anybody
and
can
I
prove
don't
that. Look, I actually
why
don't think that.
It.
Maybe this is me as a pollster, Chuck, and you know data well. I don't think you can prove those numbers one way or the other. There's no way to really quantify crowds. We all know that. You can laugh at me all you want.
That was Kellyanne Conway on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd. As she mentioned the, well, alternative facts given by the U.S. Press Secretary, Sean Spicer. Well, the relationship between Donald Trump and the media has been a contemptuous one ever since he announced his candidacy for presidency of the United States. And since he was sworn in as president of the United States, it really hasn't let up. Now, just to give you a little idea of what we probably can expect over the next few years, here's an exchange between Donald Trump and the CNN White House correspondent.
Since you're attacking us, can you give us a question? Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking our news organization.
Your organization.
Can you give us a chance
Let's
to
go.
Ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, can
Quiet.
You state, can,
Quiet.
Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically?
She's asking a question. Don't
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be
you're
rude.
You're attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you
no,
give
I'm not
us a question?
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you state categorically?
You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically that nobody... No, Mr. President-elect, that's not
go
appropriate.
Ahead.
U.S. President Donald J. Trump calling CNN White House correspondent fake news. Now, this, of course, I think is something that we will see over the next 4 years. He hasn't been in office that long, and it's already started. Mind you, this circus already started before it. So, fake news and the post-fact 24-hour media landscape, which is a fatal combination. How much is fake news skewing public conversation, and who is ultimately responsible? Well, actually, we're going to go down to an interesting story concerning Australia. Now, fake news is nothing new. It was sort of maybe created out of the last election in the United States, but it's actually starting to go around the world, in Europe and also in the Asia Pacific. Australia's Prime Minister has criticized the elite media for neglecting the real concerns of the public. Now, does the Australian media need to heed a lesson from the U.S. election, as too much attention is given to polls and opinion. Jonathan Green speaks next to Sabina Wolf. She's a media commentator. Miriam Robin, she's a media reporter. And Catherine McGovern, senior associate at the Agenda Group.
Fake news. This has been such a thing, and it was such a thing around the Trump campaign, notably, that the stuff that was carried on things like Facebook. I've got a little grab here. Listen up. This is the wonderful Milo Yiannopoulos being challenged on this idea of post-truth.
What does it say about Steve Bannon, who's now chief strategist, that you don't care about offending disabled people, ethnic minorities, women? You don't care about that.
I don't care about offense-taking.
He doesn't care about that.
I care about facts. I don't care about your feelings.
I thought you believed in a post-fact universe.
So who?
That's one of your quotes.
Is it?
We live in a post-fact era. It's wonderful, you said.
Yes, what I meant from that was just telling the facts are no longer enough. You now have to be persuasive and charismatic and interesting and funny.
The fun bit is that he might be the White House press secretary in the new administration.
Wouldn't that be absolutely terrifying?
This fake news thing, I mean, Catherine, you're in the business of communications. How easy is it to get people to swallow whatever it is you tell them?
That's a really great question. I think a lot of the time most people believe other people. It's their natural way of being, although I think we're seeing that change now. And because of this sort of thing, because of the internet, because of not having authoritative places to go to for news, people are getting much better at sifting through what doesn't make sense, what's offensive, what actually doesn't seem to logically add up. So I think people are getting better.
You think they're sifting it out? They're working out the fact from fiction?
I think a lot of people are. I think there are some people who don't and never will. But yeah, I think there are certainly people. I think a lot of people go look at some of this sort of stuff and go, really, that's just rubbish.
I mean, Miriam, it's been such a talking point in these last couple of weeks and post the US election. I mean, there was no end of stuff. We have all the fabulous examples of Macedonian news turning up on Facebook. And people actually, Catherine says we're sifting it, but people that would appear, quite credulous in pockets.
Well, I guess what this sort of reminds me of in a way is I grew up in Egypt where fake news is very, very common, partly because people... The media is repressed, and so rumours go around about all of these atrocities that are being covered up by the government. And it's a sort of similar vibe here in that I feel that people don't trust the media, so they turn to fake news. It comes down to the lack of trust in the established media that large parts of the American population have at the moment.
And I guess fake news, Sabine, is not a thing which is likely to increase that sense of trust.
Well, no, that's true. But I think it's becoming more important to... I think we are in a bit of a transitionary period at the moment. It's becoming more important to have trusted, credible sources. But, you know, for the moment, while people figure out what those are, we're sort of in this post-fact space, I guess you could say. And I do think that people tend to, Facebook is a really good example of this. People tend to believe that people around them that they know are genuinely telling the truth. So, you know, I think the reason fake news was such a problem is because you had friends and family sharing these pieces on Facebook. You try to believe that. I don't know where we're going to go, but I do think that it's more important than ever for a strong and robust media culture.
Well, and Miriam, this is your beat, and we're in this environment where the traditional hierarchies in media are collapsing, where, you know, we used to get our news from authoritative sources. It was edited, it was moderated, it came from places we trusted. Now it can come from anywhere. It is hard to pick.
It is, and a lot of the things that would go around Facebook, partly because people are sharing them, but also partly because the Facebook algorithm would serve up stories that would match what it perceived as your political views. A lot of them look really credible, and I've fallen for one or two fake articles that I've then Googled what is this website, and it's like, you know, I believed it for 5 minutes and then I've looked into it because it seems too extraordinary. But you know, I guess that's my job. So I did put in the 5 minutes to look around, and usually someone's done it. This is a hoax article. But I mean, a really common one that I see all of these you know, some journalists sharing on Twitter is a story about how Trump said that if he ever ran for president, he'd pick Republicans because they'll believe anything. And apparently this was an interview in Life that he gave. He never gave that interview. He never said the quote.
Hmm.
And this gets shared around as well.
Which is the other part of this, Catherine, that we all want to believe what we believe. So confirmation bias is such a huge part of this. And when you have, you know, sort of online social media silos and echo chambers being fed with their own fake version of facts, it's a weirdly sort of sustaining environment.
And I think it's really interesting because actually I think there are people who want to be challenged on their views and actually want to dig deeper, but there are huge numbers of internet algorithms, Facebook being a great example, as Miriam said, of actually people material being screened before it even hits you, of actually to your personal prejudices or biases or even your search history. If you ever search something that you haven't searched before and you spend 5 minutes or 10 minutes doing that, some of the stuff that comes onto your system the next day actually just reflects that rather than anything else that you've been doing. It does echo. It just keeps echoing.
Echoing and reinforcing and perpetuating. I mean, Sabine, you say it's sort of transitional, but that's, but where is it heading exactly?
I'm fully prepared to say I have no idea. Something I do think that we need to be wary of is, you know, you've seen a lot in the last few weeks, a lot of people talking about the need to censor fake news and reform Facebook's algorithms and things like that.
Or take some responsibility for it, perhaps.
But I have a bit of a problem with that because you get into this very messy kind of area between fake news and satire, and the two are obviously incredibly different.
Breitbart.
I'm thinking more The Onion and Clickhole. Yes, the two are actually incredibly different, but you know, who gets to decide what is real news and what is fake news? How do we tread the line carefully between satire, which I think
what
serves
do you mean
a
who
very...
gets to decide what's true and what's fake? I mean, isn't that fairly self-evident? It's either true or it's not.
Yes, but who gets to decide whether or not the source is satire or fake news? And I think, you know, in that context, we do need to be a little bit careful because satire is, of course, itself its own incredibly important method of political discourse.
Are we just making category errors here, Miriam? Or is there a sort of, and this is something that's been thrown at Facebook in these last few days, this sort of absence of sort of curatorial responsibility for what's being put out.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not that worried about taking out satire because I think that fake news is obviously often intending to deceive you and that can often be quite obvious. I mean, on the whole curating thing, I'm a little bit hesitant to lay it all at Facebook's feet, partly because on the one hand, Facebook can do something about this, and maybe they should because it would be a good thing to do. But on the other hand, I don't know if you guys ever notice at the bottom of websites, you'll see things like Outbrain or Taboola, which are affiliate links that websites get money from. And this is on a lot of really major news websites, including Fairfax in Australia. And sometimes there's fake links in that as well. And the whole web ecosystem is built on attention, and Facebook is part of that, but so are news publishers. And I think that's the problem of how the internet is monetized at the moment.
I guess what it does point to, he said, blowing the corporation's own trumpet for a moment, is perhaps the value of a public broadcaster beyond commercial political influence. And yet, of course, we get accused of various things by all sorts of people. Here's the Prime Minister having a crack.
I often get on the elite media like the ABC. I would have thought after this last election in the United States, people might focus less on the polls and less on the opinions of commentators on the ABC or in other elite media outlets and focus instead on what people are actually saying. The real issue, the real challenge for politicians, and dare I say it, journalists, is to actually get in touch with the people, listen to the people, focus on what the real concerns are.
This has been the great political
This is absolutely absurd coming from from a politician to say, oh, we need to focus on what the people are saying. Well, that's good, mate. How about you take that advice to heart and actually practice that? No, I get so frustrated
he
with
can't
this.
Can't be an elitist. He catches public transport.
I also enjoy the pronunciation elite. That's a very elite pronunciation of elite. But, yeah, I mean, you know, for politicians to say the media are out of touch and, you know, they're not particularly listening to what, you know, people are saying when you have a government that is apparently bereft of an ideological agenda, a legislative agenda at the moment, I'm not sure. I think they might need to start at home. Look inwards towards yourselves.
Well, that's true. Why, I wonder, Catherine, does that have to be a media responsibility for media to you know, lead this process of communication with the greater public?
And I really don't think it is a media issue just alone. I mean, I think politicians start at home. Look at what's happened around the world this year with Brexit, with Trump and so forth, of people actually appearing not to be listening to what people actually say when they get to a polling booth. You've got to get to a polling booth before anybody actually listens to what's being said. Mm. So politicians need to take some of that on as well. And I'd agree entirely with Sabine. Go back to your base and actually think about what you're doing as a group before you start pointing fingers at everybody else.
And there's something, Miriam, isn't there to be said for a media which is a bit elitist? Especially in this area of conversation around fact and truth and inquiry, if that's an elite activity, well, kind of so be it.
Well, I mean, I think what he means is sort of, do you focus on bread and butter issues or do you focus on a culture war issue? And I think I do think there is something to what he's saying in the sense that who's been pushing this 18C thing? I feel like it's been the Australian newspaper.
You've got some fun facts on that, I think.
So, they've published since August, since that infamous Bill Leak cartoon that led to an 18C complaint now withdrawn, the Australian has published 135,000 words on 18C. That includes articles, letters, columns, editorials. So if you look at who's setting the agenda in Australia right now, I think it's the Australian newspaper. They're certainly doing a far better job than the politicians, and they're setting the agenda for the ABC as well.
And that cartoon, of course, had the distinction of being the last Bill Leak cartoon that anybody could understand.
Or the first in some time also. No, but you're entirely right, but that the Australian have been pushing 18C, but also there are certain sections of the Liberal Party, I'm thinking Mr. Bernardi perhaps, who have also been pushing this quite heavily. So, but, you know, it's incumbent, I think, on the rest of the Liberal Party to say, hang on a second, we know this is not what concerns mums and dads out in Parramatta or wherever.
Which they've been saying. I mean, Barnaby Joyce has been saying that this past week, as has Malcolm Turnbull. I mean, it's an interesting thing, though, Catherine. I mean, the right media have their set of concerns. Leftish progressive media have their own set of concerns, gay marriage, for example, notably, both of which could be argued are kind of out of touch with common sentiment and common interest. I mean, I wonder what's that disconnection is not healthy for media, I would have thought.
Well, it's what leads to Facebook allegedly being responsible for 50% of what Americans read in relation to the news, because they're actually switching off from those traditional forms of media and they're going to other forms of media which are actually not necessarily any more authoritative, in many cases much less authoritative, but are actually potentially talking about what they want to hear.
A conversation about fake news between presenter Jonathan Green, Sabina Wolfe, a media commentator, Miriam Robin, a media reporter, and Catherine McGovern, a senior associate at The Agenda Group. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We now go to Tonga. Tonga's government has given the Tonga Broadcasting Commission $91,000 in cash as an injection to move to set its signal throughout the outer islands. The head of the Tonga Broadcasting Commission, Nasi Fita, says the investment will bring great benefits to the people of Tonga. She spoke to Kororo Vanuatu.
It will have a lot of impact positively. The operation of both radio and television of the Tonga Broadcasting Commission, and it was a request that we made to the government of Tonga for some assistance because we have some equipment issues here that we need to replace some and also source for the spare parts. especially in our AM transmitter, the medium wave transmitter, for the only radio AM here in Tonga that can cover all of the Tonga group. So that's one of the major projects that will be funded under this 200,000 Pa'anga equity that government has just approved for TBC. And of course, we have other equipment to be purchased, like a TV analog transmitter as well, and other smaller technical equipment that we really, really need in order for us to operate and to be heard throughout Tonga and to be watched by the people, especially in Tonga Tapu and Ewa on television Tonga.
It's a timely announcement, it seems, given the climate that's going around the region in terms of broadcasting. You'll well know the ABC pull out of the shortwave service in the region. So I guess this shows it's even more important for TBC to be heard around the kingdom.
That's quite true indeed, because we rely to some extent on the medium wave operation of Radio Australia, especially in times of cyclone. But good thing that RNZ, Radio New Zealand International, annually provides such a coverage that we may be able to fall back on if Radio Tonga 1 goes off air due to some technical problem during times of natural disasters. So that's quite true. And the new equipment will really help with our transmitter for the AM station, and that's Radio Tonga 1.
I think in the past, in recent history anyway, there's been, some may describe it as a interesting or a frosty relationship with the government, but I guess this shows that maybe that has thawed.
It's no big deal, you know, when there has been some misreporting on our relationship with the government, especially the current government, and that is something beside from the operation of TBC. You know very well we operate a new service and we have guidelines, especially ethically, and also the principles of impartiality and also the rights for the people to know. And of course, we have to cover both sides. Sometimes that causes a friction between our leaders and TBC. But it's nothing to stop TBC or the government of Tonga from us helping each other.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Glenn Hauser will be up in a moment for this week's propagation forecast. But first, this.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF to Total Journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
All right, now time to take a look at propagation. Here is our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through February 11th. Normal at all latitude bands. From Space Weather South Africa through February 11th, magnetic conditions quiet, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through February 12th, solar activity very low, no significant flare activity. Geomagnetic field mainly quiet to unsettled. No earthbound CMEs are expected. From FK Jana in Prague of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be mostly quiet on February 10th, 11th, 13th, 14th, 22nd, 23rd. Quiet on February 12th and 26th. active to disturbed, February 15th, 18th, 19th, 24th, March 1st and 2nd. Quiet to active on February 16th, 17th, 20th, 25th and 28th. Quiet to unsettled on February 21st and 27th. From Space Weather Canada, the long-term magnetic activity forecast calls for peak DRX nanoteslas in the auroral zone on February 14th, 23rd, and 28th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field expected to be quiet with unsettled to active levels on February 14th to 18th, 22nd to 25th, and 27th to March 4th. G1 minor geomagnetic storms likely on February 27th, March 1st, and 2nd. And G2 moderate geomagnetic storms likely February 28th, with ANK indices reaching 30 and 6. Lowest days and Ks of 5 and 2 on February 10th to 13th and 19th to 21st. Solar flux rising from 72 February 10th to a peak of 82 on the 20th and 21st, down to 73 by March 4th. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting through February 13th off the west coast of Mexico, including Baja California Sur, off the coast of West Africa, February 11th to 14th, off New South Wales, February 10th and 11th, a possible link to New Zealand the evening of February 12th.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Sorry for the rustling paper noises. If you want to contact us, our email address is very simple. It's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell here in Taipei, Taiwan, wishing you well, saying 73 and 88 to the ladies.